Hello and welcome to Elite Cadre, the Hordes War Machine podcast that's hemorrhaging money. I'm Mike.
I'm Alex.
I'm Kurt.
And I'm Nick.
This week we'll be taking a brief preview at SteamWorld 2013 and what our expectations are for it, taking a look at P-Scar and spelling it out, and deliberately avoiding the fact that the full preview of Galleon is out.
You've acknowledged it now.
You kind of did. Yeah.
That's part of the joke.
You've already overstated it.
Does it have the bombardier effect? The more we talk about it, the longer and longer certain players have to wait.
Does this mean I have to release a 2-hour MP3 of just the word over and over again?
No, I think you release an MP3 with the sort of implication that that's what's on it, and in fact there's some kind of lift music. Or our theme music slowed right down.
Yes.
And then you say it once in the middle.
It could be an artsy podcast, like that whole 24-hour psycho thing that screened a few years ago.
Are we not? Like, is that not us?
24-hour psycho. No, that's only what happens if Alex interrupts me in the intro one more time.
I thought we were an artsy podcast.
Yeah. You keep dreaming, Kurt. It's nice to know you've got ambitions. Should we talk about it anyway? The new model preview?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't really play Mercs anyway.
I do.
Oh, yeah. Play. Alright.
See, it's causing mass controversy already. We might as well. We've started, so we'll finish.
It's big, it's hairy, it should have red on it.
Yes, Gertie's talking about the new model preview that's come out, which is the full preview of Galleon, the mercenary colossal. And it is very orky.
It is more orky than... And people seem to think that, like, occasionally, especially new players, talk about trolls as being like orcs. But I think mercs are the new orky faction.
Well, they're cobbled together and half-arsed stuff, to be honest.
Yes.
Yeah. It hadn't occurred to me until you pointed it out, then I looked at it and just went... Oh, yeah.
It's a stomper.
And if you painted it red, it would probably go a little bit faster.
I reckon so.
So, aside from it looking a bit orky, it's all right.
It needs bigger legs.
I think the stumpy legs are fine. It looks like it's venturing a little bit into the realms of too much. Just pull it back a bit. It's going desperately to that Games Workshop fiddly bits, odds and ends, bits over
Fjords.
Here.
Fjords.
All of the Colossals so far, other than the Adjudicator, have been very clean models. And this is the only one that is busy, as you said, and it's just...
I mean, it is kind of fitting for Mercs, I suppose, in that it does look a bit... rough and ready, cobbled together, bits and pieces all over the place. But at the same time, it is just a little bit busy. And...
I think that the issue with it is it's kind of stuck in that strange place between the pirates and the steelheads. It's kind of got all the extra baggage and gubbins and obviously the name of a pirate vessel, you know, but it's essentially it's also steelhead as well, and I think that kind of confuses its identity maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is sort of trying to combine those looks because you've got sort of the crowned smokestack of the Nomad, but at the same point you've got cannons from the Mariner, but it's got the shoulder pad that's very clearly inspired by sort of some of the more normal mercenary casters and units, but it's got the harpoon, and it's a bit all over the place.
Glamorous.
It's not bad.
Glamorous eye makeup, I was going to say.
I think the helmet is meant to be sort of a bit like a early 1800s diving helmet from what I can see. It's not quite a big daddy, but it's close. Just with a bigger chin.
It's the same theme as the Jacks, I suppose, as well, really, isn't it?
Well, like I said, there's some bits...
Mariner.
Yeah, there's some bits that are borrowed from the Jacks, but it is kind of a bit of a mishmash between the Merc and Pirate Jacks. Although, yes, they're not separate factions. They just feel like it sometimes.
They are different aesthetics, though.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely.
That was a long word.
Yeah, it was like Nick had just woken up briefly to say that. He is the Father Jack of this podcast.
You don't know how accurate that was for a second. I just suddenly looked up and went...
People are talking. What's going on?
Like I said, he's the Father Jack of this podcast.
Arse!
I'm a little bit upset about that because I thought that was me.
Well, to be fair, you haven't broken in with that would be an ecumenical matter yet.
It's true, Arse.
So
it is true.
But I think that's as much discussion as we really need on Galleon.
It's about 10 times as much as we intended.
Yeah.
Short man in the hat was happy in his pants for a week.
Ugh.
We didn't need to know that. I don't think the world needed to know that. Just no. Stop. Cease. Desist. I believe it is time for moving on.
A new section, is it?
Yes. So everybody gets drunk.
it's the only way to make it through a full episode.
Yeah, except you, Alex.
I don't know how I'm going to cope.
So yes, I thought we'd have a quick discussion on.
That's funny that. Yeah, we have a quick discussion.
Yeah, I know the quick discussion in us. It doesn't really go together, does it? No. So, but I thought we'd have a quick discussion on Steamroller because we've heard the first hints being dropped of next year's scenario pack.
Yeah. One thing we heard quite a while ago was that the word specialists being bandied about. Not quite sure not exactly where I heard it, but I'm sure I've heard it a while ago.
You heard it about the TempleCon, much like last year they had the Flanks for the Memories, and they bandied around the word reinforcements. This year it is specialists starting for their midnight event.
About the only thing we know is that it's going to be one of the optional keywords at the back, stuff like the stuff that's now there is stuff like Modern Warfare as a variant of the normal game.
Yeah.
So quite what specialists are going to be? Don't know.
No idea. I can't make anything up.
I mean, there have been suggestions, people saying, oh, it'll be, you know, an optional 5 points and they'll have to choose, you know, one of them before the game. So you could have sort of, you know, a squad of Widowmakers and a War Dog or, you know, something else for 5 points that does something different that you just slot into a force. Which would be an interesting dynamic. I'm just not sure how easy it would be to pull off on the turn.
It could well be sort of an extra few points to spend on something from that Warcaster or Warlock's tier list or something, maybe, that you know, you get those extra bits and it has to be out of the tier list. I don't know.
Could be.
Until we see it, I don't think we're going to know. But a couple of other things that have been bandied about. Was it DC? Bombshell?
We've had DC and Will Hungerford have come out.
Have they?
Yeah, together. DC's big announcement was that radials are going away.
Ooh.
Which makes me really sad, because Sacrifice is one of my favourite scenarios.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's a decent idea to get rid of them, but from the point of view of someone running a tournament, because there's that whole thing where you go, right, the next round is a round with radial scenarios. And suddenly about 7 or 8 players put their hands up and go, can you move this piece of scenery?
Why don't they move it themselves and cheat like everybody else? I mean, like, I've heard.
But it's that whole thing of,
I'll just move this arbitrarily and slightly to my advantage. But you didn't move it first, so moving on.
It's that whole thing of people just naturally set up tables originally going for this side versus the other, this other side mentality. And when you switch to radials, sometimes those terrain setups don't quite work.
I do like the way that radials screw over distance estimates, though. I do enjoy an E Lilith assassination attempt that's half an inch out of range.
Yeah. As has been seen by at least once, Beast standing in the middle of nowhere for my army going, this doesn't appear to be the best kind of thing for me to be doing. Yeah. I thought they were interesting and different, and they were in, was it this year and the year before? Weren't they?
Yes, yeah.
So,
still sad to see them go.
Yeah, well, I'm sad to see Sacrifice go.
Yeah, I like Sacrifice. Command and Control's not bad either.
I was going to say, I'm not sad to see the back of Command and Control.
I like Command and Control.
I've won
the one I don't
games.
Like...
Sorry.
Go on. No, go on.
I was going to say, Command and Control, I've actually won twice in Scenario recently.
Very nice.
The only radio scenario I don't really like is Distraction.
And yet, that's probably the one I like second out of them. I really like Sacrifice, but Distraction's got to be my second
I do like
favorite.
Distraction, yeah. I think Distraction's probably my favourite of the radials. But I mean, I think it's one thing kind of you can steel yourself with is that, I mean, when have PP let us down with an SR pack in recent years? You know, it's not something they do. They are constantly improving it and constantly making it better. I think you've just got to kind of, you know, although we are sad to see some of the scenarios go.
That is an interesting statement to make.
Can we rephrase it?
Continually improving and making it better. I'm kind of on the fence there about whether 2012 was better than 2011's scenario pack.
I must say, the scenarios themselves, I'm not sold on, but putting character restrictions in was something they need to do, and it's really fresh.
Yeah,
again.
I like what they did with hardcore. I like the way they did with Killbox became an artifice, and you had several Killbox scenarios. I like that. I like what they did with artifices a lot.
But before we move into that sort of that whole discussion, there is one other thing they've said they're changing about the pack as well. And that is that flank scenarios will also be disappearing.
Not entirely though,
well,
are they?
Flank scenarios are disappearing. The option to have flank and reinforcements as a keyword for the entire tournament and turn every scenario in the pack into a flank has now been put in there.
Now, I'm not sure that's the greatest way to go with it, because we don't see those keyword tournaments very often. People would rather play.
I think that is a much better way of handling reinforcements. First of all, it stops the whole thing of, right, I bought some reinforcements, oh, the TO hasn't rolled any reinforcement scenarios. Oh. Okay.
Not one. Not a sausage.
It means that also that, you know, if you're bringing reinforcements, you can actually make them more impactful in all of your lists because you know you will be playing them.
Is that a word?
Impactful. Mm. I like to think it is.
Okay, good.
It's about impact attacks, but made with reinforcements.
I think what they've done with reinforcements addresses the problems I had with them when reinforcements were announced.
As a TO, you know, you're speaking quite clearly.
Yeah. No. That was as a player. Okay. If you remember, I did have quite a long rant on this podcast about reinforcements when they were first announced.
I don't remember much of what anybody else says.
Okay, fair enough. That's probably for the best, to be honest.
Don't you listen to every single podcast in repeat?
No, I've only ever listened to one of our podcasts in full.
He just has the battle scars of the rest of them. He's lived through them, man. You weren't there. You weren't there.
I was there for some of them.
At least
kind of. Intermittently at best. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
That's what we know so far. We also know that the total number of scenarios is going down from 18 to 12.
That I like.
Which, well, now you could just say that losing those six scenarios to go down to 12, that's the flank scenarios and the radial scenarios, but we don't actually know if that's what's happening. I mean, some of those flank scenarios could potentially be turned back into normal scenarios. I mean, a flag too far is very similar to the old capture the flag.
A flag too far has got to go.
That flag really is too far.
Yeah, the second flag is too far.
I'd just like to point out that at a recent event, I won 4 control points and the scenario in that scenario.
I must admit, the last game at Masters this year, I won by scenario on that scenario.
I got 4 points. I was very happy.
You didn't. I didn't give you any points on that scenario.
I've played in the other similar series.
No, yeah, I think you mean in another. No, in the Masters he didn't, but I think he's talking about another game.
I know. Never mind. Moving on.
Stop stealing my catchphrase. But yes.
Outflank, outfight, outlast was around before flank as well, wasn't it? So let's get back to what it was. Like that one.
Are we doing this? Are we going?
I never had flank as part of it. It just had reinforcements. So.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just a normal deployment.
But with reinforcements as a artifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, I mean, are there any other scenarios that could potentially be transformed back, or that you'd like to see binned from the 20-chop pack?
We know, is it Demolition or Destruction? The one with the two things that spawn and you can power up their armor.
Ah, you mean the Legion auto win?
We know that's being completely revamped, as they were testing a version of it earlier in the year, and apparently the new tested version is very nice.
That one couldn't possibly get that much worse, I don't think.
That one's been around for quite a while, with them slowly trying to remedy it and bring it back to life.
I think they should bring back Ridge Raiders.
Oh God, go away.
We do not need this. No.
Yeah, just simplify it then.
I mean, there's a lot of hatred. I believe myself, unwarranted hatred towards the objective scenarios. And a lot of people are a bit miffed. The radials and things are going away, and the objective ones appear to be staying.
I think a lot of the things with the objective ones is that the having those extra six cards at the end is kind of a bit of a problem, because as a TO, you've kind of got to either print them out or assume players will have them, and players never ever have them. And then
I have them, but they're in my scenery box at home usually.
Yeah, and then
not very helpful.
If you do print them out, you often find that players just go, oh, it was contested all game, so it was completely pointless. And that's kind of the main thing with them. I don't think I've ever had a game where any of those interactive objectives has really come into it, except when I was playing with the beta for 2012, where I got to use the free charge ability on one of them. And that was
it. Like the which one's the one where the ammo is cached in the middle and you've got two oblong zones and you can shoot into the zone.
Bunkers.
And you can basically if you get there faster if you can
incoming
up
incoming.
Around yours so they can't shoot yours.
Incoming. And yes, I have got the incoming one off a few times. I've never got the demolition destruction, whichever one that one is, the one in the middle that's got the 5-inch pie plate of death. Never got that one off. I don't think anyone ever has.
I was close to pulling demolition off, as in actually using the objective. The only thing is that where my caster was, there was no useful place where I could actually put the pie plate down.
I tend to find that it gets blown up before anyone gets anywhere near it.
I've never had a game where the objective has been destroyed.
I've destroyed objectives.
I've destroyed objectives. My game against ETC against Rich Padgett, we both gunned for destroying the objective and then backed off from each other, which was an interesting thing.
I have actually just in total found them to be largely an irrelevance to the game.
I quite like some of them. I quite like the ones that they move, not so much, but I quite like the one like where you have to capture the contest the objective with your caster and or hold the objective with your caster and you've got to then take the zone. I quite like those. There's two of those.
I quite like Restoration. I find Restoration nice and simple. I quite like it. The cases are there. You have to destroy them to score, but they're reasonably defendable.
Should we just ignore him until he can say cash or cachet properly?
Yeah,
I think we should too.
Okay, moving on. I think if they actually went through and took those six cards that they've got and distilled them maybe into two or three.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think as it is, there's too many things doing too many different bits and pieces. So people have just gone, yeah, I won't bother remembering what
they're doing. It does. It's one of those sort of things that I think penalises new players as well, because if you're an experienced player, you know your army, you don't get confused by everything else, you've got all that down, so you can concentrate on, what does this thing do? Whereas if you're new to the game, you tend to get caught out and lose on scenario because somebody goes, oh, I've won because I've done this, 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 and you go, huh?
Well, talking with Tim Martin a lot recently, he's actually been saying that with the amount of scenarios and the amount of objective cards, the barrier to entry for Steamroller is pretty much higher than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And it's really not new player friendly as it stands.
I think we've got first-hand experience with that, Mike, just in looking at us venturing to that new club local to us, and the players there do not get Steamroller at all. And it is just how much there is in that Steamroller pack.
There is a lot there. I mean, well, I wouldn't say that they don't get Steamroller entirely. It's that they're unfamiliar with it because they haven't ever played it. They've played the standard scenarios from the War Machine and Hordes book. So they're both used to having those sort of 10-inch deployment zones and, you know, there'll be, and scoring starting on turn three and all this kind of gubbin.
They're also, as you said, very much trying to get used to their own army. They don't want to worry about what's going on with this scenario, what does that thing do, everything that you just said.
Yeah. To a greater or lesser extent, and like I said, that's part of the barrier to entry for Steamroller. So hopefully, going down to 12 scenarios should remove some of that, because there will be a lot less to remember.
It's a challenge, I do like the 2012 Steamroller pack. I like it a lot. I like what they did with it. I like the artifice kind of change and things, but it is complicated, and it took a couple of months to really get the hang of what was going on, and that's when you already know your army, and you know what's going on, you know the rules.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd agree. It's, it does need to be pared down a little bit.
Well, I've actually, just as a sort of a quick reference, gone back and looked at the Steamroller 2010 pack, and the difference in just 2 years is absolutely phenomenal. I'm just, it's only about 16 pages long, and there's things like, well, it's not called Mosh Pit, but there is a Mosh Pit scenario in there, which will be familiar to pretty much everyone who's ever picked up the War Machine rulebook. And a lot of the simpler scenarios that I still enjoy playing did originally come from the Steamroller 2010 pack.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it also contains things like Process of Elimination, but, you know, frankly, we can just gloss over that and move on.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what the next one holds, and, you know, sort of see what it brings, really.
As long as they keep Incursion and Close Quarters, it should still be okay.
Incursion's great.
Yeah, it's always great to play Incursion and have a bit of a moan when the middle flag goes away. It's like one of those shared experiences that all players must have at some point of, we're playing Incursion, the middle flag's gone away,
and I have a brick army.
Yeah, that's what it does. I find switching to Menoth much less of a stress. In fact, it makes life easier if the middle one goes.
Oh, I don't have to keep things in my control area now. Well, doesn't this just change things a bit? Oh,
I've got rather a lot of infantry that's got quite good armour on its own. Well, that's fine, I'll run over there.
Oh, look, I've got Defender's Ward.
Oh, yes.
Bleeding Menoth. Not as bad as Signal, but, you know, very few things are.
They almost won the War Machine weekend.
They did, and then didn't.
And then they didn't. Yeah. Video replay. Awesome.
That's a new thing that's covered, because there's been, I think there were a couple of things that were overturned because of the video replay, weren't there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that coming in?
It was Team Covenant, wasn't it, that were filming it? I think they were filming it for their own purposes to do video releases from it. That was the original plan, but then, of course, it gives the window for using it for that purpose because it's digital. I don't know. Makes it fair, I suppose, when obvious misdemeanors occur.
Just the fact that something like that happened at such a big events final.
Yeah.
Where in the final, it was believed something had activated and done something, when it hadn't.
Or couldn't have done, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Well, there was,
the issue not to do with the fact that he had three jacks and only two choir. And
Yeah, that was it. And he thought the choir had affected it, but it hadn't, because it couldn't have. Because it wasn't within range.
And it's a better way of doing it than saying, right, you kind of auto-lose the game, because essentially, not intentionally, but you have cheated. So it gives you that kind of fairness of, you know, being able to go back and say, right, okay, let's see what we can do to rectify it.
I think as long as it's... For something like that, as long as it's implemented so that it can be done quickly and accurately, in the sense of if something is moved, you can reset it.
Which is the same situation that we're in.
Yeah. As long as it can be done like that, I don't have a problem with it. It's if it started holding up tournaments at the top level by any significant amount that it would get a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, mind you, these are the same arguments you have in sports with video replays, to be honest. Yeah. So, there's sort of, you know, an infinite number of sports podcasts out there who've talked about having these kind of things for years.
So when do we think Hawkeye is coming to War Machine?
Oh my god.
You know, the really interesting thing is, though, that all this discussion means that we're actually really quite a lot like footballers. Not nice, Kurt.
He's never going to speak to you again now. Actually, to be fair, for some points, Hawkeye would be quite good, because you'd have that whole thing of, you know, someone just leans over the table with their tape measure and goes, right, so 12 inches, I'm in. And you see something at the side of the table go,
or an arrow hits it in the middle.
Punk! And then a dog comes chasing after it.
Where's the dog come from?
You don't read the new Hawkeye comics, do you?
No.
With his dog Arrow.
Oh my, no, dear God, no. That sounds awful. No, I don't read, I don't read much Marvel at all.
Can I just do a quick moving on there?
Eric, please.
Yeah. You can. Please, doesn't mean we're going anywhere.
To be honest, this is the podcast that's been spinning its wheels for an awful long time at this point. However.
Moving on.
Yes. So, I mean, is there anything else we've got to talk about with, Steamroller? I mean, we've talked about what scenarios we'd like to get rid of, and to us, I don't think there's anything that's gone away I'd particularly like to see back.
Ridge Raiders?
No. That's no. Just no. I also wouldn't like to see Grind come back.
I didn't like Grind until I played it as part of a tournament.
Oh, was this the triathlon?
No, pentathlon.
Yeah.
And I suddenly found myself loving it.
I think it was that tournament that really made that, though. I don't think it plays well outside of it.
It was suddenly because you couldn't win unless you were playing the grind game. You couldn't just win. Assassination did work, but you got no points, so you had to score. And I was like, this is really good fun. I like this a lot. No, Grind's a separate thing. I don't know. I suppose I was also playing Trolls, so without really realizing that it was a good idea. Everything in my army except my caster had at least one open fist. That helped.
Filth.
Is that P. Doom Show by any chance?
No, it's P. Madrak.
Right. Okay.
It was a Tooth and Claw Star tournament.
Actually, there is one scenario I think I would actually like to come back.
What would that be?
Gaining Ground.
Oh, no.
I don't remember that one.
That's the one with the three boxes, and the higher score, the further away the box is from you.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
I didn't like that. No.
Really? Fair enough.
I think you're in on that one, Mike.
Yeah.
I think my Vindictus would do well in that.
It never used... You both used to get your close ones, and you then just spend the rest of the game fighting over the middle one, so you may as well just play Gauntlet.
But the close one didn't score any points.
Did it not?
Okay. No, it didn't.
I know what the...
Was that not the 2010 version of it?
No. The version you're thinking of was one that was part of the Hordes release events that Tim then ported over to a scenario for a Dudley Dark Lords event, where you got 1 point for the close zone, 2 points for the middle, and three for the far. The one in Steamroller was naught for the close one for the middle, two for the far.
But it still just became you fought over the middle, so you may as well be playing Gauntlet.
No, there were ways around it.
And I think as well, it gives you that option, gives you that kind of, yeah, although you could well be playing essentially another scenario, it gives you that sort of, you have to defend against something else as well. It's that additional sort of thing that you need to defend against, if that makes any sense.
In a convoluted sort of way, yes. just as long as Revelation doesn't come back at this point, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah.
Revelation? That was the one where the second flag turned on once one player had scored on the first one. Which inevitably meant that because the second flag was never placed on the table, you would end up with it having to sort of disturb half a dozen models to appear. And then there was an argument with players going, well, you haven't scored on the primary flag, so you can't score on the secondary. It's like, read the rule book. It's like, oh, horrible scenario. Horrible, awful, blah.
That's one to come back then, yeah?
No.
Definitely. Twice.
Just to torture Mike.
Yes.
As a TO.
No. Scenarios don't torture me as a TO. I get to torture players with them. It's so much different.
No, I still reckon you'd hate it.
All the whining you have to pour with.
They just send me out to deal with it. Unfortunately, them's the breaks.
You just whine that much back at them that they probably should have and think, right, and just quiet, it'll go away.
I was going to say, the only whining I ever had over scenarios during the entire Midland Steamroller was in one round where we had minus 15 minutes on the time, and a couple of players were like, huh, that was a short round. I could have won there, but I lost because of the time. It's like, well, tough.
Randomly rolled scenarios. Deal with them.
It wasn't even the scenario. It was just
it was the timer, yeah.
Yeah, that was all they moaned about. The scenarios, no one actually seems to complain too much about because they all know they're suffering the same amount. And also, I did ignore scenarios like Guidons.
Despite my yells to put them in the final.
No.
We did put them in round three, actually.
It wasn't Guidons, it was the other one.
It was Guidons, it was the one where you had to move the...
No, it wasn't Guidons. It was...
Supply and Demand.
Supply and Demand.
Yes. Which was reworked and still wasn't quite...
Working.
Yeah. I think this is one thing for next year's scenario pack that PP really need to actually get a handle on, because if they release another broken steamroller, because those two scenarios, where Guidons and Supply and Demand, when Steamroller 2012 was released, were unutterably broken.
Yeah.
They really need to get a handle on that for next year, I think.
It's whether they... I mean, I know they do the press-ganger testing. Well, whether they need to open that up a little bit and just have a public test.
It's processing when it comes back is the hardest part of that, really. It's making useful information out of it. Because you've got press gangers, there's a lot, it's like a couple of hundred press gangers now, so there's quite a wide test bed.
Well, the thing is as well that you have a 12-month development cycle for this. You've literally got 12 months in which you've got to test internally, test externally, get it proofread, send it out, and have players playing it.
But it's not 12 months at all, because they, for the first part of the year, they're still dealing with the old one. For the first 6 months, they are still working on the old pack and fixing bits with that.
The first 6 months. Oh, you mean as in actually still patching it?
Yeah.
I would argue that doesn't really distract
them. But even then, having that 6 months... That then takes away from the time they've got to develop and test the next one.
Essentially, it's 6 months prior and 6 months after, so it's still a...
Yeah.
A kind of a 12-month cycle.
So, I mean, having a year to redo these and make sure they're all balanced, it's going to be tight given all the other stuff that the company does. And, well, actually I suppose it is partially Hacksaw, who's not really PP at all as well.
Mostly Hacksaw, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't Hacksaw the lead?
It's Hacksaw and
Dev
DC.
On this? Yeah.
So, and we know they've been working on the new pack for several months already. So,
and the biggest thing is, what big changes are they going to make in regards to Colossals? Because obviously, Paxor didn't know Colossals were coming out. A lot of the old scenarios, a lot of the 2012 scenarios we've been playing, were never written with Colossals in mind.
We think.
No, we know, because Haxor came out and said, okay, I didn't know, and I have to make these quick patches, such as storm walls, storm pods, and such things like that.
Well, storm pods can't hold objectives, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Still contest that.
Control, yeah.
It will be interesting to see what kind of changes come about as a result of that. I'm not sure how much you could do, though, without effectively saying, ah, Colossals don't work with scenarios.
And a lot of stuff at the moment with Colossals, a lot of the scenarios, you just park a Colossal and go, right, you can't score on that until you kill this Colossal.
But Colossals aren't unkillable.
No, I know they're not. But they are a big ask at times.
Your Colossal is only... Well, I was going to say, are you talking about Mountain King or the one that's not based yet?
I don't have Mountain King.
The one that's not based yet?
And I do own a Stormwall, but let's not talk about that.
Worthwhile investment?
Sorry?
Worthwhile investment?
Oh, totally, yeah. Not an impulse buy at all, sat on the shelf, half-built, not half-painted, but it's absolutely priceless. No, I just meant mine, because it's mine, so therefore mine's better.
Fair enough.
Wasn't really meant to be the adjudicator superior, though. I do think it's rather nice.
It is quite tasty.
Power strength 22, get in. 4, even. 24.
Filth. Colossals do also have an impact in other ways on the pack. In that it has been mooted that the points will increase. The standard point levels will increase.
It's 75.
Yeah, what do you think to that?
It's interesting. I suppose it means you can swap out a jack for a Colossal at that sort of level, and that kind of, I don't really know.
I mean, the way the game is progressing, the speed that it's now being played at, I think increasing it up to 75 points is kind of a sensible way of kind of maybe slowing it down a little bit and making the games a little bit longer, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if that's why they're doing it or not, but...
I was going to say, does that not add to the barrier to entry for new players as well, then?
Massively, and I really don't like that.
Transport of figures is the biggest problem with 75 points, to my mind. That's to me, the first thing I think of is, how am I going to carry models around the event? How am I going to transport my models to the event?
Battle three lists at 75 points, what the hell am I going to do?
Unless they reduce the amount of lists, unless they go back to a kind of a standard two-list format.
Well, two lists is still the standard. It never ceased to be the standard. It was only Masters events that required three.
As some would argue, yeah. The Masters is the standard.
Really?
Standard?
Masters is the big event in the UK scene to us is the Masters. Everybody goes to the Masters, everybody plays the Masters. If you win the Masters, you win that top prize for the year, regardless of what you do in the other events. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Don't forget, though, obviously, this rules pack isn't just written with the UK Masters in mind.
No, I know.
That's a true statement, but I don't necessarily think that Masters is the standard.
This rules pack is written with, and the most it's been played is at 8 and 16 player local Steamroller events. And that's largely what it's there for. Yes, it also provides a good rule set for your big Masters events and your convention events, but that's why there are extra options in there, such as large event scoring and also the three-list format that only apply for those big events. The standard one is still assuming 8 to 16 players.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
That's just my take on it, to be honest. But, you know, I shall squash all discussion before me and kill conversation with the weight of my opinions.
Well done.
Yes. Well, it's good to have a host on the podcast who can completely eliminate all discussion at all times with but one sentence.
I wasn't listening.
What were you saying?
Do you ever listen, Kurt?
Sorry, what? What was the point again?
Yeah. The other big consideration for next year is the fact that well, Hacksaw said multiple times that perhaps Death Clock is the way the game is going.
Oh yeah, I like that. That I like a lot. I've played a few Death Clock tournaments now and I really enjoy them. And in fact, my practice games, against my regular local opponent up until recently, we were playing most weeks and yeah, playing Death Clock almost every single time. Even if only small scale, even if only 25 minutes in, even if only a 25 point game, we'd play it out in 35 minutes or so.
I think one thing I'd say about Death Clock is it's kind of like time turns. If you're new to it, then it kind of seems, oh my god, what are we doing? How do we do this? But if you play with it and you use it and you kind of get used to it, then over time it becomes second nature.
I think there are two main points I'd have about Death Clock. The first is I think it marginalises scenario play.
Yes.
Because either you've got to go the full whack and get the full 2-3 scenario points, or you lose.
Yeah. I mean, I like time turns. I've not really had that much experience with Death Clock to be able to pass a realistic judgment on it. But I without having played it really too much, I prefer, I would say, time turns.
Well, there's only really one big Death Clock event in the UK, and that is the ETC.
Yeah. The word is that obviously Masters is going to go to Death Clock next year, though.
Cool.
That was mooted at the end of last year. This year's event, even. Not last year. And this year's event, the next year would be running as a Death Clock event.
I mean, I would say as well that Death Clock, I found the timing to actually be largely irrelevant. Certainly the ETC anyway. I didn't time out. No one against me timed out.
The ETC was relaxed Death Clock though, was it not?
I timed out at ETC year before last. And I don't know, it's interesting because it just keeps pace up. Gives the same amount of total time. If you win, you win. If you don't, you don't.
No, it doesn't. It's not the same amount of total time.
It's more total time.
It's
not.
No, it's, yeah. It's what? With expansions? It's more. With extensions?
Yeah.
What's that?
What, 4.53 of the total time is how, have you worked the maths out, is how different compared to including your expansion, your extension?
But you have total round time, and that's what will...
No, the total round time is the chess clock variant.
Yeah.
No, not Death Clock. When you're playing time turns, you have a total round time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which, regardless of your extensions or anything. Therefore, but the fact you're playing at 0.53 of the round time means you're at 1.6.
But your total, 1.06. your total time is times 0.53 of the turn time. I mean the overall time that the D6 is variant on the end of it and that kind of thing.
I'm getting a headache.
What's the difference, Nick? What's the difference?
4. Moving on.
It's a minuscule difference. That's what I'm trying to say. There is a difference, but it's tiny.
Yeah, you have very, very slightly more time on Death Clock, though it's assumed that therefore you're playing the exact same times on time turns, which you never are. One player will always have more time than the other in time turns, unless you can get that perfect every second thing, which is like trying to get a draw in Steamroller.
I just don't even want to think about playing for a draw in Steamroller. The amount of stuff you'd have to keep track of every single turn.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to work out what Nick's trying to argue, that's all. I'm a bit confused.
I think my argument would be as well that Death Clock breaks the flow of the game quite badly in some cases.
I don't find that at all.
Because with time turns, you've got your 7 or your 10 minutes, you've got to get stuff done. If you're not the active player, you know that they've got that amount of time and you can sort of watch the clock, see what they're doing, and you're never really too far out from what's happening on the field because you've got to be sitting there going, okay, I know what I'm doing next turn. You've got about 2 minutes left, let's go. Whereas Death Clock, I find that because some players sit there on turn 3 and go, I've got half an hour left, let's just slow this right down and see if I can assassinate you this turn. And then spend the next 20 minutes just sitting there going,
But if they fail, they'll time out.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, that win or lose, because they've taken that amount of time, it's a less enjoyable game.
Yeah. Yes, although I would say... I would say that you get that with less experienced players, and when you start playing it, especially with, I've played quite accelerated Death Clock as well. You get experienced players, and they don't want to burn their clock because they don't want to sit there, and because it's not in your interest to do it. It's never in your interest to do it, really. To grind the game down, I don't think. Yeah, I can see what you mean. I can see what you mean, but I don't think at a certain level it happens.
Fair enough.
Which certainly shouldn't happen. I agree, which is what you're saying. But yeah, I don't know. I've enjoyed it. I've played it in tournaments. I've played it casually, and I've played it in tournaments, and I've enjoyed it both experience. And I think it provides a better platform than Time Turns.
It will be interesting to see how much of it gets played next year, because at the moment there is really only one major tournament in the UK that uses it.
There is.
The ETC.
There
is.
It doesn't even use Death Clock, though, does it? He used Chess Clock.
Chess Clock.
Yeah, I have the Turtle Round Time as well.
Yeah, it was Chess Clock. Okay. I prefer Chess Clock over Death Clock because it does, to an element, give you that like you say, that scenario play that you can play to essentially get one point.
Have you seen the variant that's been played in the States where deployment is part of that time?
I like that as well.
I actually think that's a good idea. I think in either format, deployment should be timed.
Death clock with deployment as part of the time, I think it's very, very good, because they go, right, you start now, and there is no title round time, but to be honest, you're already deploying on the clock, so pull your finger out.
But it was very noticeable, just going back to the Midland Steamroller series, just watching players and saying, okay, here's the draw, you have 15 minutes to get to your tables, get set up and get ready to start. It's very noticeable just how many players physically couldn't get to their tables and set up their armies inside of that 15 minutes. And it's like, well, just, you know, put stuff out. You've made the armies, you should know roughly how you're deploying. It should take you 5 minutes unless you've got something very troop-heavy.
If you're troop-heavy, if you know where it's going, you just chuck it out.
Yeah. So the amount of times I see people just, halfway, you're sort of 10 minutes into the round, and someone's going, right, I've deployed, what's your advanced deployment? Like, yeah, just speed up.
Should be on the clock.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Deployment on the clock.
But again, that's penalising new players, because that's a harder thing to try and do.
Yes it is. But then again, for new players, if they take 15 minutes over the deployment,
it's difficult, isn't it?
It's not going to make the situation better for them by not having.
No, I agree.
Yeah, if you give new players more time, they are just as likely to make the same cock-ups.
I'm just thinking, I know, but it's there's a different level of pace and time, isn't it? I've got more gaming clock. I've got more gaming clock than playing against the new player, because I'm deployed in, you know, inside 2 minutes, I'm done.
Yeah.
And they're spending for 10 minutes. I've got, that suddenly gives me 7 minutes more gaming time, also, give or take. But that's part of it, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, it will be, I think the conclusion is, it will be interesting to see where Steamroller does head in 2013. We're getting little bits and bobs sort of dribbled out all the time by PP and by Hacksaw himself appearing on other podcasts and going, ah, well, here's this interesting word, and then not saying anything more about it. So, we'll just have to wait and see for it's TempleCon that normally gets released, released for, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait until then, in February time next year.
Well, we usually get the beta leaked at some point after.
Usually someone daft will put a copy of the PDF somewhere.
Yeah, not immediately. It's not usually peak time, is it? But it's usually around.
Normally people have got a friendly local press ganger that can help them out with a pack.
Or in some cases, a mad one from another country who has put up the beta pack for one of their own tournaments. Which was how the 2011 draft one came out.
Right.
I'm not going to say which press ganger, which country, just that there was a slight accidental release of the pack quite a bit early.
Was it an Australian by any chance?
I couldn't possibly say.
So, I think we should wrap this up to a nice break and see you guys.
I think we should go to a horrible break.
Yeah, I think it'd be better. Halloween wasn't that long ago. We should have a horrible break.
Yeah. I don't have any spooky music.
So on all of you.
Oh, actually, I think I have some with some cheap lightning sound effects at the top.
Oh, awesome.
So, I'll see what I can do.
Not as cheap as that.
Was that Alex's behind?
No. He was just doing lightning sound effects himself.
Yeah.
Moving on. Everyone, this is Norbert, and believe it or not, another year's gone by and it's time to get ready for Food Machine. I know you're sick of my voice, but the worldwide hunger problem hasn't gone away, and we need to keep the movement going. Last year was our most successful year ever, with War Machine players just like you donating a total of more than 43,000 cans to combat hunger. So let's all try to smash that record this year by either organizing a Food Machine event or donating like you have a pair. Visit foodmachine.njsobs.com to download the rules pack, or find us on Facebook under Food Machine. Project Orange Crush Hunger is back as well. This year we have a Tier 4 Lord Carver army being painted up by the community. We've got Privateer Press's Matt DiPietro, Meg Maples, Leo Carson de Pasquale, and this year's Gen Con P3 Grandmaster winner Richard Curtis to donate models to the effort. If you want to paint up a model for the army, sign up at the website. Or else contribute to the raffle and have a chance at winning it by visiting razoo.com/thrallharvest2012. Whichever route you choose, the important thing is that you're doing something for people who really need it. Thanks for listening.
Are you looking for affordable terrain for your tabletop and your bases? Then try Terrain Geek. They have a growing range of hobby supplies, including Army Painter and Cote d'Armes paints. All this and more is available at www.terraingeek.com. They are also contactable on Twitter at @terraingeek.
Irish Masters 2013.
50 points, 6 games, 3 lists.
9th and 10th of March. Associate with Leprechaun.
In Dublin City Centre.
Be there!
Right, welcome back to the second half of Elite Cadre. We have had an email.
Email is about penis extensions.
No. Damn. No, really isn't.
I tell you what, the amount of girls that want to get in contact with me is amazing.
Are they Russian girls?
Some of them.
I just get these
Nigerian men who keep telling me that they have hundreds of thousands of pounds to give me, but I just have to give them 1,000 first.
Is it actually the law that every podcast has to do this exact series of jokes whenever email is mentioned?
Yes.
First time. It's our first email.
No, it isn't.
Okay, well, it's first one in a while.
I'm actually looking in the email. Well, to be fair, this email was about 2 months ago, but yeah, fitting it in a show before now has been a little tricky.
So do we need to apologise?
So we apologise for the our tardiness in responding to this email.
So basically what you're trying to say is that no one checked the email, no one saw it was there, and we've checked it this
week. No, I talked about it, I mentioned it, but we were preparing for the anniversary show at the time.
Yes.
So the gentleman in question has probably rage quit the game in despair.
Well, it's from some very nice called Andrew. He's talking about how he's having trouble beating P-Scar with Menoth.
First of all, pick up something heavy and hit your friend who's playing P-Scar round the head. Because playing P-Scar against new players is a very mean thing.
I was going to say, I think the best way to beat P-Scar is just not bother playing against him.
Well, I think following on from the last episode we did, probably the best advice is play Vindictus.
That works for me.
The list he's given us that his friend is playing is very, very infantry heavy, and Vindictus will have fun with that on feet turn.
I mean, he's looking at...
What about on chain attack?
Moving on. Kurt, finish your sentence, because otherwise he'll just make another joke.
I just lost all to live at that point. Feet turn's better.
We love you, Terry.
I've lost it, yeah. Terry, come back and interrupt Mike all over again. It was much funnier when somebody else was making my jokes for me. His friend, friend I think should be in quotes at the structure. Fairly stand. Oh my god, just in the last line of the list.
Would they be Nis Hunters?
The Nis Hunters at the. I mean, anyway. So Death Ripper, Helldiver, Nis Hunter, full statistics Raiders with UA, and the Raiders captain, Baal Thralls as well, Mechanics Thralls, Necrosurgeon and Sitch Thralls, and Sea Witch, and Nis Hunters.
It is a very, very nasty list. I mean, you can't tell him, go Jack Heavy, because the statistics Raiders are just going to sit and munch his caster through the jacks. Go infantry heavy, because the Baal Thralls are just going to clear it all. It's not a nice position for a new player to be in.
No. I mean, the first thing, Baal Thralls always make me think you want something fast, just run and engage them and just laugh at them. But it's not as simple as that when you've got Raiders there as well. Looking at his lists, he's got two Peace Heavy lists and an E-Krios list. And I have to admit, with the relatively high defense of the Raiders and the Nis Hunters, I lean more towards E. Krios, if only for his devastating feat, but I reckon her Bastions, Falerents and Officers are good place to start. It's a tier list, isn't it? That's about tier 3 or tier 4 of E. Krios.
Yeah.
But like, without looking at the book. He hasn't got numbers, though. He's got a full unit of Errants, 10 models, 12 Exemplars, and Bastions, I suppose, staying back and defending Krios would be a thought. Difficult. There's not enough numbers. I mean, on feet turn, he'd wipe out half the army, but you've still got the other half of the Krix army to deal with.
I do think Vindictus is a good bet here, because you've got the... it's got self-sacrifice to the Zealots. Has he got Zealots in that list of stuff he's got?
He has. Which way around did you mean?
In the list of the guy's got to play with, to make his list out of.
I can't see any Zealots there.
Doesn't look like Zealots, no.
Fair enough.
But yes,
pick up some Zealots. Best unit in the game.
He does have sacrificial pawn on ranged attacks against Vindictus, but it's kind of situational. You do it to make sure you don't get ranged assassinated, but it's very rarely do you get ranged assassinated by Krix. It does happen, but it's rare.
The Nis Hunters was more what I was thinking there.
Don't remember the last time I was ranged assassinated by Nis.
Don't mention that to Nick at the moment.
Okay. That's a sore point, clearly.
Nemo's very squishy. We'll just say that and move on.
And the Renegade is still awesome. Not my Renegade, just a Renegade.
You were willing it on.
Oh, I was. Anyway. So, yeah.
I also feel this is an email that should be written to Alpha Strike, not us.
We could forward it on to them, see what they say.
Well, they are the Crunch podcast.
That's what I'm feeling.
Best advice you can give to you, Andrew, is email at 12 Strike Radio.
Or really anyone who knows what they're doing, frankly.
I'm still going with the hit your mate around the back of the head with some heavy. It's playing Peace Scar as a newbie, yes. Especially with those things.
Buy a Kador Devastator, glue it up, stick it in a sock, and just smack it.
Has to be an old metal one.
A metal one. Plastic one's not going to have the same effect.
It would be quite hilarious to do it with the plastic one, but no.
You might throw a coffee table over.
See, you can't even do it with the Behemoth now, because that's resin.
I was actually thinking more seriously looking at his two. I don't know, I've not used Pieces of Iris a great deal of late. Mark 1 I did, but not so much in Mark 2. I really don't know which of those two lists is better. I lean more towards the one with the more errands, but that may be
the thing is with Ritsak and such things. She's not really bothered about her focus. You get one turn to strip it off, and if it's a bad time for it, your feet is really doing nothing compared to Scar's feet, which is breaking the game.
Oh, I do feel you need to remove her army, not try and assassinate her. You need to kill her army. That'd be the best advice I'd have for that, is don't try and bypass it. You have to kill her army. And she's got no way left to kill you apart from coming for you herself, and she's not amazing at that. Not crap, but not amazing.
There is also the disadvantage that Peace Heavy has in that his thing is it Eye of Menoth?
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's pretty good for boosting stuff like blast damage, which half of the Krix force is immune to.
Or too high armor to be bothered by.
Yeah. Decent enough for going after the Bile Thralls, but you only need one of them to get through.
I'd agree. I mean, Vindictus is one of the more survivable Menoth casters as well, because once you get towards the end game, you move Defender's Ward onto yourself, you become Def 17, Armor 18, plus your focus. So you do become quite difficult. It's quite difficult to kill towards the end game.
My other caster suggestion for this would be Harbinger. Because the feat would severely break a troop heavy Krix army.
Fight filth with filth, you say?
Yeah. Or you can force the opponent's feat in your favour, that in order to move through your feet, she needs to pop her feet and get that plus 5 armour to survive the power 14s.
Even then, Sotixus Raiders go to, is it 17?
Yeah, no, even then he could heavily threatened. But I'm
still talking. Only forced to kill them. On feet turn.
It can cause that effect that if your opponent really needs to do something this turn, they have to blow that feat for it. That's just, you've just turned their feet in your favour. They're no longer using that for the plus 5 strength.
They're using that to go, can I get in the area? To be honest, Harbinger's pretty much good all round, but anyway, there's a little bits of advice, and we can probably do a little bit more because we've got Spelling It Out now, where we can go on to looking at P-Scar.
Whose idea was this? Nick. Should we blame Nick?
Yeah, let's blame Nick.
You can blame Nick. You could blame Nick.
Very disappointed in Nick.
I'm sorry, I thought it would be quite continuous.
It's another day for making it words, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. It's a Tuesday. Not quite.
No, we're close. Not quite.
We are very close by this time. So, P-Scar. This app needs to download additional assets in order to do the complete. It's always what P-Scar you want.
You have to read it out. Have you not got the book or anything else?
The book's too far out of grasp, and I decided to pick up War Room as you were talking. However, War Room is apparently broken right now.
Technological fail.
Give it another 10 or 15 minutes, the card might appear.
I could go read the cards in the battle phone bag, which is even further than the book.
Well prepared, I see. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We ain't talked about this an hour before we started.
I've been painting. Oh. I've been putting my tears into this fucking bastard.
Oh, does nobody love you still?
No one ever loves me. Especially not you.
Oh, Nick hates this Stormwall. Oh, good.
I hate painting.
Ah, he's a proper Signar player, then.
I like my Stormwall, I hate painting it.
Ooh, I'm a Signar player. I hate all my things.
It's all crap. Is my stuff so much worse than yours? Why is yours better?
This unit's so terrible. Right, it ignores your concealment, and it's Rat 7.
Right, can we ignore everything you're just saying and add the word painted into everything you were just saying?
No.
Fine. Screw you. Card library. Krix.
Oh my word. I've just found the Superhero Squad Mysterio figure. It looks nuts.
Pirate Queen Scar. Sacrificial Strike. Life Trader. Life Drinker.
Are we back on topic? Wow.
We are. Right.
Vaguely.
What do we start with? Do we start with feet or do we start with spells?
Have you not played a game out before? It's amazing, the start of every spelling it out, people go, what do we start with? The spells or the feet?
Not people. Nick.
Nick.
Alex.
Oh, no, Kurt did it last time as well.
I deny all knowledge. It's not like it was recorded, so you can prove it.
Alex. Alex normally runs spelling it out. So that's why I don't pay attention.
You try to blame Alex for the fact that you just don't know what you're doing.
Right, so, Pirate Queen Skinner, she is a Focus 6 Warcaster. Don't let that number deceive you. She's really not.
No, she isn't Focus 6. It may say 6 on the card and on her focus stat. She's really not Focus 6.
She has 6 Warjack points. Don't let that fool you. She secretly comes with a free Skylark. You're only just playing at 48 points instead of 50. So spell number 1. She has a Backlash. Now, did we do spelling it out with Kalissa already?
No.
Some reason I thought we had as well. Backlash is a 3-cost spell, is range 8, is upkeep, and is offensive.
It's very offensive.
I just had to cut off completely, and I just flipped through the book because I was going, Skylark, 2 points! With your excellent math there. Thinking, I was going to show him. I'll go find it and look at it first to make sure I don't like it.
And then you found
and
out.
And you go, it should be 3. Surely the Skylark is 3. No, it's 2 points. Wrong.
No, it's Crix.
Fucking on. It's like, what the hell? 2 points for a Skylark.
is this like the 3-point Squire and the 3-point Covenant Joe?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, the 3-point foul corner. And,
The fact the pistol race is 3 points, but the Skylark's only 2 really confuses me.
Moving on.
Yeah, so, Backlash. When target enemy Warjack that is part of a battle group is damaged, its controller suffers 1 damage point.
Horrible. Especially if you've got lots of attacks to throw out.
Yep, especially if those attacks come from...
And a unit that already has that similar effect.
Yeah.
Stixis, which is also named differently, so they do stack.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say if that unit, for instance, had some sort of ability to have an extra damage die and charge a Colossal. Just saying.
And, you know, combined melee attack with the ability to link with their partner's horns, so they got an extra +2 to hit.
And that's what's called.
I was going to say, doesn't even need to for the Colossal.
Doesn't need to for the Colossal.
Just takes as many attacks as it can and hopes to get 1 on every one damage off every single one.
So, yeah. Well, get 2 that way. Really, really good. Going back to the email, one thing to note is that if you take the Avatar of Menoth, it doesn't work. Not part of the battle group.
Yep. Also, you're a Menoth player, so take the Avatar. Just in general.
Up to dinner, I find. Bottle of white wine. Red wine, actually. Red.
It's called a crutch for a very good reason.
Yeah.
Second spell is Blood Rain. Blood Rain's another 3-cost spell. Is range 8. Is AoE 3. Is power 12. Is not upkeepable, but is offensive. Blood Rain causes corrosive damage. And models hit suffer the corrosive continuous effect.
I believe Chain Attack has a name for this.
Shitty nuke, but actually pretty good.
It's all right. It's still a rift in the vein of a rift. It's still a nuke in the vein of rift or things like that. It just applies corrosion as well,
which can be really really nasty.
Can be, but the model if the models you're hitting with it. If, you know, the power 12 will either kill them or, the corrosion is just kind of a side thing.
The AoE would be power 6, so that doesn't kill some things, but can also then knock high armor, single wound infantry, kill them in the maintenance phase if it doesn't go out. I mean, the fact that it causes corrosive damage means that some things, obviously like Gorman or such things, are immune, but,
Yes, my assault commandos. Yeah, I was going to say, my assault commandos will live long.
And prosper.
Yeah.
Very bad.
Yeah. Let's move on from that one.
So far, on a 6 focus Warcaster, we've had a 3-cost and a 3-cost. And then we have Dark Guidance, which is a 4-cost. Is range south in a control area. It's not upkeepable and not offensive, but it is offensive, but it's not offensive. While in this model's control area, friendly faction models gain an additional die on their melee rolls this turn. Melee attack rolls this turn.
It's pretty good.
Use lots of mercenaries, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Nissan does.
All the time.
Mm. Nissan does, maybe, but no, I think as a rule.
They occasionally use Crow's Cutthroats as well.
With, what's his face? Who's his gob? Scavarus.
Yeah.
Oh. It's all models, so it's your Jax, it's your warrior models, it's your caster, it's freaking everything that's getting this extra dice. And, we know what Crix and Melee are like, they're best friends.
Yeah. That's gonna make pretty much anything hit. Unless it's going for really high def stuff.
That is pretty much the best melee buff in the game.
Yeah, debatable. Yeah, pretty good. There's a additional die and plus two are debatable kind of comparison, aren't they?
There's a curve somewhere, isn't there, that sort of shows.
Yeah.
What's good?
It's everything in her control area, though, isn't it? That's what's really good about it. It's not just one model or unit, or it's everything. It's a bit like Carnage, isn't it?
It's one of the spells that's up there with Carnage, Signs and Portents, etc., as just good. There really is no downside to it other than you're having to spend stuff.
You have to spend 4 focus on it. Oh wow, she will pretty much be casting this the entire game. Well, after turn 2.
That's fair enough.
And the next spell is Hellfire, which is another cost 3. Range 10, pound 14, not upkeepable but offensive, and a model or unit hit by Hellfire must pass a command check or flee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that there?
No fucking clue. Does anyone ever cast it? I've seen it cast once, I think, by Deathjack.
I'm pretty sure I've had it cast on me.
It's not a bad spell, it's just another high cost spell in a high cost spell list.
I think it was purely so someone could try and get me to take a command check, and I kind of just went, that unit's fearless? Oh. Yeah, you kill one model for 4 focus, good game there.
Fair enough. That's all we got to say on that.
Yeah, that really is all we've got to say on that one. It's
And then the game changer, the reason that she can run all these high cost spells, Ritual Sacrifice, cost 2, range 6, remove a target warrior model from play, Scar gains d6 additional focus points during your next control phase.
Friendly warrior model. It's really important to mention
not,
that
one. It's not an offensive spell, so it couldn't be cast at an enemy anyway. But yes. So friendly warrior model from player, Scar gains d6 additional focus during your next control phase. Ritual Sacrifice can only be cast once per turn.
Thank Christ.
I mean, there is...
broken, yeah?
Like it's not already. It has been ruled that you must roll the Ritual Sacrifice dice when you cast the spell. Which was on the PP forums and has been brought up many times.
Yeah.
Make that much difference.
It does because you need to. Because it's one of those things like, she's only going to have 1 extra focus next turn. That's not so bad. Or, she's going to have 6 and there's an arc node within a mile of me. This doesn't seem so good.
Unless you've got Castigate as a spell. Go back to my Menoth book.
So that's why you take Scarlock, because the Scarlock casts it for free. And means Scar doesn't need to hang out with her infantry.
Yeah.
And this is what Jimmy used to buy Food Machine last year.
But again, that's a charity tournament. You're allowed to buy it.
I should know.
So, okay, well, that's. There's really not much you can say about that spell other than having D6 extra focus is good.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
But then again, she needs it with that spell list. Everything in that spell list is a high cost spell. Without it, she wouldn't be able to cast anything there.
Well, she would. She'd just be permanently crippled.
True.
That's a nice dream on its own, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's not in the unhittable range, defense-wise, and if you hit her, she crumples like paper.
Yeah, because she's effectively a damage 11 caster.
Oh, that depends on your list building. Completely depends upon your list building.
There's the whole thing of having that, the one healing modelling crick right next to her. Oh, look.
You can't say her defensive stats are rubbish. She's got combined defensive stats of 31.
She has combined 31, but she's
above the curve, isn't it? Let's be fair.
It is, yes.
Just before we go any further, we should probably discuss her feet.
Yes. Okay, her feet.
She's got two of them, and they're both...
One's Ritual Sacrifice that she casts every turn, and the other one's Dark Guidance. No, her feat is called Blood Magic. Scar suffers up to 5 damage points. While in her control area, friendly faction models gain +1 strength and +1 arm for each damage point she suffers as a result of Blood Magic. Blood Magic lasts for 1 round.
Yeah.
Slag.
All Stryker got was +5 armor. God
yeah.
Damn.
It's basically, how can we take Stryker's feet and make it much better?
He doesn't have to maim himself to do it, though, but yeah, true.
As I said, you can just take the nice healy thing, sacrifice the stitches, and sit there and heal that 5 damage up. Also, you've got, because you're rich sacking everything, you've got butt tons of focus that if you don't want to use, you can just sit on and camp and increase your stats.
Or pay to heal.
Or pay to heal, yeah. Ever camped 12 focus? Well, now you can.
Just... wrong.
In many, many ways.
Yeah.
Do you think that you can crack armor 27?
There are some models that could give that a good go.
Couldn't armor piercer, no.
No, there's not a lot that'll crack 27 on a small base.
On a small base, no.
No.
I know, things with Arcane Assassin would give it a good go.
Yeah, that's true.
Still can't beat the armor, though. Yeah, no, it's
the defense that becomes the big problem on the stuff with Arcane Assassin, because usually it's only mat 6. Which is
the day that Rhett get a caster with Dark Guidance is the day we all fall down dead.
Keep yourself.
Now, Rhett aren't allowed nice things. Jimmy's playing them now.
So you're not allowed to do stealth.
Anyone got more stealth models? I need a good army to play against Jim.
Not blue ones.
No. Didn't think so. Any troll ones, other than scouts?
No. They
don't have proper stealth.
No.
Damn. Need a new faction.
You get a circle, I mean, quite a bit of stealth in there.
That's true.
You're not borrowing mine.
I did Crick's army with quite a bit of stealth in it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I feel we veered off topic.
Yeah. Anyway, that is P-Scar. She's relatively filthy in just about everywhere that matters.
Yeah, she does, doesn't she?
One thing to note on the feet, though, is, I mean, to me, it's kind of a pointless it being, you know, you can do up to 5, because if you're doing any less than 5, you're either A, doing it wrong, or B, toying with your opponent.
I have seen some people who have been bashed down to one or two health points, have then had to use focus to heal to pop the feet to go back to 1 HP.
I've come across that where people have kind of got popped it for 3 because they were at death's door before they got as far as their feet.
In that case, you're doing it wrong.
True.
Well, you're doing it wrong because you're losing with Peace Car, frankly.
She's got a couple of other cool things, such as she's got Sacrificial Strike Star Action, where she can, within her command area, remove a model and hit a model.
Range command. Target a model in this model's line of sight. If that model is in range, remove one friendly faction trooper model within 1 inch of this model from play. The target model suffers a magical damage roll with POW equal to the base arm of the removed model.
Yep, which can cause some interesting deaths.
One thing you can't do anymore that you could do in Mark 1, not to reminisce too much, is boost a Bane Knight's armor by 5 and then remove that. I believe in Mark 1 it may have even been her control area. I'm not 100% sure on that. I've not got the book to hand.
It was called the Scar Bomb, and it was filthy. Yeah. Go look it up.
It's still effective. I mean, it's not really something that's used that much anymore, but you know, if you need to clear out a troublesome solo from a sort of objective or control area, you know, you've got that there that you can do.
And her command is only 9, and it's sort of like, that's now within 9 inches of her, and you're sacrificing her attacks.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, if you're blocked from attacking that model by other stuff or your own stuff, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It's...
charging with some Banes and then put a power 16 on,
caster.
Solo.
Yeah. I think it's, it's crazy, so it would happen. But like in a game where you've tried everything to kill that one solo or, you know, that one model that's just blocking out that control area and it's got a box or two left that you need to get rid of. You know, if it's going to win you the game, then it's situational, but.
It basically says, I don't like your Eris, Gorman, etc.
Cut off your jib.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And she's also got Life Trader and Life Drinker on her weapons and Knockdown on her rack.
Great rack.
Yeah. Basically, she's a caster that's entirely filthy all the time. And doesn't really have the option not to be.
I think she's a really fun caster to play as a new player, but to play against, she's fucking horrible. So if you're a new player playing against experienced players, pick up Scar and roll lots of dice and make lots of big numbers. If you're a newbie, if you're playing against another newbie, don't play her. It's not nice.
So what caster in Crix would you say would be good to play against a newbie then? And what caster isn't utterly broken and horrific?
Because that's just starting yourself at a disadvantage. I would probably go with Iron Lich as a nice starter.
That's because he's a positive caster, because he's a buff. He's one of the few things in Crix that is a buffing caster, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a buffing caster. He doesn't mess with your opponent ridiculous amounts, and he just feels nicer than everything else. Moving to his E version, oh god, no. But the P version, I would go with.
That's because there really is nothing nice in Crix. They don't do nice. Any faction that has two versions of Denegra.
Well, Crix are all about their casters. That's what they are about.
Yeah. And also they're cheap and ultimately quite useful infantry.
Yep. Very nice.
And they're ridiculously cheap arc nodes.
Stop now.
Balance to win.
Yeah, Jim, Mr. Brown will start complaining again. Lots of Crix hate. I mean, we haven't quite got as far as Crix hate yet. We just said they're horrible. But I'm sure Crix hate.
To be honest, whatever Crix hate there is from me will always be tempered by the fact that I hate Signar more.
Mine will always be tempered by James Brown staring in at the window right now.
Should invite him on the podcast. If he's all right outside the window.
He never comes in. He just looks at me through the glass.
He's not even making breakfast yet.
Does he text you about what he can see?
Not yet. Well, I haven't looked at my phone. It probably has.
This being the case, I believe that the spelling in our segment has run out of steam somewhat. So,
devolved into Crix.
Yes.
Moving on.
We should probably move on to the final segment of the show, which will be The Painting Table, sponsored by Terrain Geek.
Woo, Terrain Geek.
Woo.
I'm not sat here painting a Terrain Geek base or anything, no.
Well, they've actually just sent me some of the sponsored stuff for the Kidderminster Food Machine event. So, yes, look forward to Terrain Geek goodness there. Inappropriate Food Machine colours.
So what is the next bonus? So what's on your painting table then, Mike, aside from...
My painting table? Well, not much paint-wise. However, there has been a bit of a gargantuan construction effort in that Waldrath is now proudly sitting on my desk.
Ooh.
Yes. He's an absolutely... The thing is, I didn't really appreciate the size that Waldrath was until I put the Wald Guardian next to it.
What, like he's in the picture?
Yeah. And Wald Guardian barely comes up to Waldrath's knee. That's how big the Waldrath is. It's an absolutely lovely model. And I live in fear of the day where I have to come around to painting it. It's just... It does look absolutely gorgeous, though.
Go to Army Painter and buy one of their nice, flat, wedged dry brushes. You'll be needing one.
Well, I have been experimenting with the paint scheme for my walls because I want to do them as sort of a sandstone effect.
Okay. Yeah, much like a lot of my Menoth bases at the moment. Really, yeah.
So at the moment, that means brown undercoating and working up to the yellow slowly. And I think I've got it okay on a walled watcher, but we'll see from there. But really, that's all that's been on there. There will be some new stuff there soon because I've just ordered quite a bit of stuff from Titan Games. Because I'd quite like to play Cromac.
Hey.
He seems good.
He is good fun.
So, well, anyone who can do a spell assassination with Rift just, you know, deserves to be played.
I've been quite out by that before.
Oh, that's, well, I'm only just in rage, so I'll just Rift you four times. What?
And you got the Wald Wardens casting it as well.
I actually don't own a Wald Warden yet.
What?
I know. But I own Getherix and Megalith, so, you know.
Well, so then you do own a Wald Warden of sorts.
Yeah. It's on the list to be bought, but that's after the Druids and the Cavalry.
No Druids?
Not yet. I've only just started. I'm going to a Journeyman League on Thursday at Stafford Games, so.
Yet you have a Waldra?
Yes, because I had some money left at the end of the month and went, I want that thing that's just come out.
Went, I need the essentials for my Circle army.
Exactly.
No, I'll just buy a Waldrath instead.
Waldrath on a resin base, lovely. A Terrain Geek resin base, no less.
Oh, who do you think?
See what I did there?
Yeah, good.
Very good. So, Kurt, what about yourself? What's on your painting table?
Right now, a full unit of Temple Flame Guard and UA, and some Daughters of the Flame, and at the back some cleansers waiting to get some paint on them again. Temple Flame Guard are well on the way, just sort of doing some highlights on their cloaks and stuff, and kind of getting to the point of going, it's all very ripply, I might resort to dry brushing. With an overwash, obviously. With an overwash to tidy it up afterwards, but it's getting a bit kind of... I've only got 3 weeks to paint it. Quick! They look lovely on these lovely chunky resin bases. I'm just going to chuck it in here and just make it work. And I've also got Fiora's base as well, which is, as you asked fairly recently, I think, on Twitter, what am I doing with all this fire that I'm creating? Have you stuck it on a base yet? I have stuck it on a base. I'm building up, yeah, the scenic base that Epic Fiora came with.
Yeah.
I'm expanding the fire theme on that, making the flames bigger with my nice new flame effects I've been playing with.
Very nice.
I thought your pyre troll had just snotted somewhere.
See, I hadn't even thought about adding it to the pyre troll, but I will now. This is the new plastic one, especially when I finally get around to painting one, when I go back to trolls. Yeah, frantically trying to paint Epic Fiora 50-point list for the 24th of the month.
Cool. That's a hardcore tournament.
It is. Hardcore tournament down in St. Austell and Cornwall.
So, if you want to stalk Kurt, just go down. Sorry? If you want to stalk Kurt, just follow him down there to that hardcore tournament.
Absolutely, yeah. In Mad for Miniatures in St. Austell, yep.
What about yourself, Alex? What do you have on your painter table?
Well, I was gonna save myself to the end. I was gonna ask you, Kurt, Nick. Even.
Excuse me.
Sorry, Kurt. I do apologise.
Thank you.
Aside from salty tears, what's on your painting table?
Well,
Kool-Aid. Right, I think, now. Is what he's got there.
Kool-Aid. Yeah, it's not been a good month for me painting. I've painted up some Arcane Tempest Good Mages, which have rapidly been stripped and reprimed, because I really, really wasn't happy with them. And now I'm working my way through Stormwall, which is proving to be just as much of a painting pain in the behind. Those following me on Twitter have probably seen most of this, but I'm still trying to power through it, still trying to keep going. A little bit of work every day, and he'll get there by the end of the month.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think, obviously, as you said on Twitter, those who don't follow him, he's got some random Twitter name, Janie and Seraph or something like that. But yeah, you're obviously concerned about the progress and the kind of quality you're producing on the Stormwall. But, you know, I mean, genuinely speaking, it looks good. It looks good. Just keep plugging away and, you know, come together eventually.
Thank you. No, I mean, most of what I think it is I'm surrounded by lots of people who have been painting for quite a long time, and I am a very, very new painter. I mean, this is the first hobby I've been involved that's involved painting.
Old people, is what you're saying there.
No, I'm just saying I'm late to the...
Well, I think you talk to Conrad every now and again. And Nick as well.
Yeah, they've been painting a long time.
Yeah, they've been alive for a long, long time.
True.
Like 50 years or something. God, so old.
Nick's going to find you for saying that.
I can only hear him slowly digging away there in the background, Kurt.
You just he'll probably assault me with his dry brush. Well, there's probably no bristles left on it when he uses it.
Elite Cadre takes no responsibility for the words of Alex Smith.
They are his own words and opinions.
Alex Smith's home address is available at the end of the show.
Go on then, Alex. Take it away.
I welcome Nick Roberts to come round to my house with his dry brush. On my painting table at the moment are some Legion models that are being destroyed, pretty much.
Hang
on, do you mean you've stripped them, or the previous person who painted them effectively destroyed them, in your opinion?
They've been painted to a fairly decent standard, but... I'm a bit OCD with painting stuff, and I don't like playing with other people's painted stuff, so I'd rather, you know, if I'm borrowing something, obviously I'm not going to destroy it if it's painted, but I'd rather sort of strip it and paint it myself, even though it might take me an awful long time to actually get around to painting it.
Stalker. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Is the Stalker still not painted, Alex?
Not finished yet, no.
Is it on that shelf with Mike Spriggan?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you going to strip the legs soon, do you think?
No, it's happy as it is. I think I need to put the courage to get back onto it and get kind of...
See, this is the one thing for everyone who does any painting. As soon as stuff leaves the painting table, it's very rare you will ever manage to put it back on there.
I have mastered the art of making card and paper proxies of large models so they stay on the painting table so I can play with the models. Like, for example, I have a nice colour Judicator in 3D that I've built so that I can play with the Judicator. And so when I get it, it will not leave my painting table till it's finished.
Well, I mean, with my precursors, I started the unit and about halfway through went, I need to take this to a tournament, it's fine. It took 6 months to get the unit back on the painting table. Even though it was only little bits that needed finishing off, I'd done all the metals, I'd done that, you know, all I need to do.
That's the worst phase, because it's kind of casually glanced, kind of, yeah, I do. But then you know that the stuff that's not quite finished.
Yeah. It was like you could see that half of them, the tabards, weren't completely painted over, and you'd got none of the gold edging on the radiance on the shield. And
these Temple Flame Guard that I'm finishing now, I must have bought fairly early on when I got into Menoth the first time round. So that's Mark 1 for a start, so that's 2 years ago at least. Probably another year before that. If not, it's at least 3 years ago they were left... Just put two colours in the metal on the done, kind of, yeah, on a base. Basing wasn't even finished. I thought I'd base them. I hadn't. And they've got him back in the case. So it's 3 years to get it back on the table?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 3 years ago I started painting my Winter Guard. I got about two models in and went, nah.
So it was nobody going to mean it's a Spriggan.
I wasn't painting.
The Spriggan hasn't been around that long yet. It's getting there.
Did we establish, Nick, I've been painting longer than you've been alive?
Probably. I said 3 years ago I wasn't painting. 2 years ago I wasn't painting.
I think perhaps that is a nice bombshell to end on. So if we pass you across to Alex to end the show.
You've been listening to Elite Cadre, the Hordes and War Machine podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously. I've been Alex.
I've been Mike.
I've been Kurt.
And I've been Nick.
Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Nick.
Been listening to Elite Cadre, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. Email us at elitecadrepodcast@gmail.com or find the whole team on Twitter at bit.ly/elitecadre. Music provided by Martin DeBont and Symphony of Spectres. And now, in a world of perfect production and seamless transitions, we bring you the chaos that lurks beneath the surface. These are the Easter eggs.
I sense an incoming call.
Do you?
I do.
Maybe the fact you've answered one. What?
Podcast for two of two.
Excellent. Oh, Nick's just gone to reset his router.
Oh, good. Did you know how to do that? Did you know what that means?
I presume so.
I'd presume not, you see.
I'm presuming he's worked out what the little white things on the wall are that the pin things go into, and can remove them for 10 seconds.
You have given him way more credit than I have, and we should put this in the outtakes. Conversation about Nick. Well, yeah, I've also heard he cries during sex as well.
Oh God! Not again.
It's when I buy a car, which I am now planning to do within the next few months. So,
oh God,
Nick, that's where my money won't exist anymore.
Whoa! So, Nick and driving.
As if there weren't enough reasons already to steer clear of Birmingham.
Oh my God, I'm never leaving the house.
Mike's looking forward to it.
No, he's not. He's looking forward to not driving you.
He's looking forward to being driven.
Did you not hear Mike? Did not hear my quip.
What? Stay out of Birmingham?
As if there wasn't enough reason to stay out of Birmingham. Yeah, we did. Yeah. Ignored it. Anyway.
So harsh.
Sorry, Alex. Even I ignored it. I was too busy with my own joke.
One episode away and I become the Nick Topham of the show.
Oh, Adam from Titan Games now listens to the podcast as well.
Nice.
So, because yeah, I've started listening. You've given me a lot to think about. I'm like, what episode did he start with and how wrong was it?
Sorry, I zoned out for a minute then and stopped listening to you. I think
sorry.
Because you were talking.
Yeah, it's fine.
And it almost made up for the Wachowskis, whatever, doing those two films that may or may not have followed The Matrix.
I don't mind the second one. Hey, drop the phone.
I kind of minded.
I like the car chase.
I was too young to mind.
I like the car chase.
You're too young for most things, Nick. Hello and welcome to Elite
Cadre.
One
last thing before you do start, Mike. I have to keep my fans happy.
It's good to be back.
You mean badge? That's what you mean.
Yeah, pretty much.
And seemingly Nick.
What?
who tries to get other people to interrupt me when you're not here.
No, what? Norbert did it once and it was hilarious, and so and Terry then did it, so I tried to get Jimmy to continue the trend. However, Jimmy's a nonce.
Terry's a nonce. Come back to the game.
Tell us something that we don't know already.
Right, can we go now properly, please?
Yeah, go on now.
Hello and welcome to Elite Card.
So we're starting now. Come on, guys. Head in the game.
Ooh, good crap, Brad Blitz.
Oh my god, he's going to kill you in a minute.
Even I've stopped now. Because it's gone. It's 20 past 10 nearly.
Yeah.
I'm good now. I'm good.
Yeah. Bollocks, sorry.
No, you're not. You're mediocre at best.
I'll be good then.
I reckon move.
Are you sure, sir? That does mean changing the bulb. Oh, sorry, wrong show.
Sorry, wrong show.
Okay, right. I'm going to stop there. There is some heavy breathing noise.
It's Alex.
I'm sorry.
It's Alex and he's driving me crazy.
I'm sorry, I'm sensitive about it.
Yeah, tell me. If you, you know, I'll move my
well, we can't there without stopping it.
It's very hard mid-flow.
Yeah.
Can you get the microphone out of your gob? Is the a bit soft?
It is like you're standing on a Welsh hilltop with a mobile phone.
is that any better now?
What?
What can I hear?
Bah. Oh god.
Is it any better at the moment?
Yes.
Less cheap, yes.
We can't hear your mouth breathing on the microphone. Good start.
I'm sorry. Nobody loves me tonight.
No.
I feel like Nick.
You feel like it? No, I don't. Wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Does anyone know where I was? Because I completely lost track.
Ah! No.
Hurting my feelings is where you were.
Shut up. Really?
I was 3 minutes late for my train this morning. Oh my god, no one loves me.
Did you miss your train? Is that what happened?
Yeah, 3 minutes late. No one loves me.
Fuck. Was it raining as well?
Oh, yeah.
Are you happy now I've made it about Nick?
No.
Brilliant. Moving on.
You were in Belgium on a hill. Not there are very many.
Yeah.
And it was easterly wind.
North at Sierra, south at Sierra.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
I said in Belgium, not off the coast.
Dogger, rising fast.
Really?
Yeah.
German bite.
Yeah, German bite. That's what you're
German bite. We are very sad. We're now quoting the fucking fishing
forecast. Oh, come on. The shipping forecast is very hypnotic.
If read, but I know Stephen Serafinowicz. It was Peter Serafinowicz.
Yes, the black
book. Reading it, but he didn't. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't really read it, does he? Oh, no, he does, doesn't he? No, it's what he reads. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, we did get quite a lot of rules wrong in the games I play with you. Things like how sprays don't need to hit.
Dog, giant dog soldiers in your face.
Yeah,
with Scottish accents.
With Scottish accents.
Yeah. I've got a Scottish Kiwi accents.
With a touch of French.
Maybe. Yeah.
So basically, Christopher Lambert plus Sean Connery.
Oh, no, just Christopher Lambert. Actually, just Christopher Lambert. Well done, you've nailed that. Yeah, that's what it is. Oh, I'm glad I played them. I like playing Space Marines.
You've just destroyed my faction, haven't you?
By comparing it to the Highlander.
I have to tell Jamie.
No, I've got it. No, it's worse. It's worse. It's Fortress.
No, it was during the ticket buying period, which is why it was still surprising that they sold it in like 2 hours.
Fair enough.
Much like the Welsh Open.
Yes.
Oh god. Are we going to mention that or not?
I got a ticket.
Yeah, you got a ticket like really.
Yeah, it's got a golden ticket.
Yeah. And if it was another event that sold out so quickly, I'd be contemplating boycotting it, but I can't do that to mine.
Oh, well, if I had a ticket, I would have gone and helped, because, yeah, But no, I talked with Martin, and Martin was just like, yeah, go play, get a good result in Masters. I was like, no! Pressure.
The thing is that whenever the tickets were going to be released, they were going to sell out that quickly.
Yeah.
Because 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
you could probably have said they'll release at 2 a.m. on a bank holiday. No, not on a bank holiday. 2 a.m. Monday morning. They'd probably still have sold out in 3 or 4 hours. Because people would just do that. And, you know, whatever time you release them at is going to be inconvenient for someone. Regardless.
So good for me. Because it was like, yeah, I'm outside at a computer, I can log on, bam, done. And I went and started asking people if they wanted them to buy. I did forget you, Kurt. I completely apologise for it.
Don't worry about it.
He just thinks you're a knob, Kurt. That's...
No, I didn't. I just...
It's good that you put Kurt into that, because if you've gone, he just thinks you're a knob. Which way would that have gone? He just thinks you're a knob. Like, just like... Could have been which way around? Who knows?
But yeah, no...
Who knows? Who cares?
So yeah, and no one... Everyone I asked was either helping out or didn't want tickets because they couldn't afford it. So I just bought my one ticket.
Look, I have not ever bought a Welsh Open ticket directly. I don't think all 3 years I've been, I've never got one immediately on the point of sale. It's always been somebody else had to buy it for me, or because I didn't have any money, or the first year I completely missed it, and then went on the wait list. On the reserve list and got it April or something before. It was just, you know, months ago or so, and then time to book a hotel, so. It's all very dull.
Also, I do think this bitching is another part of the thing of people need to realise you can't go to all the big events anymore.
Can?
It's unless you are first in line for all the tickets, it's going to start getting difficult to do. Because events aren't going to expand much beyond what they are now. I mean, Masters can get bigger, yeah.
Not much.
Welsh Open really can't.
Why can't Masters get bigger? Because you can't go beyond 128 without incurring another round.
But we now have the Friday option now as well.
Or changing the format entirely.
But Nick,
yeah.
Remember when the Friday option was used at ETC?
Oh, yep. I know.
Or, well, actually, how many games is Masters at the moment?
Seven. You can go to 8, potentially, if you really push that Sunday.
I think with 24 hours, with the access to the room 24 hours, you could...
You could do 5 games on Saturday and do an after-dinner game.
I think you'll get drop-off in numbers at that point, because that's too many.
I mean,
we've all played it, it's exhausting.
Yeah, I agree. I perfectly agree with you. I don't think the Masters should be past 120 as a straight tournament as it is now.
Well, 128, because 128 is the limit of
them. Yeah, that's what I meant. After 128, it should crank itself down and start to be a qualify for the Masters, US convention style Masters.
Which I think would rob it of the appeal.
A little bit, yeah.
I don't think it's going to do that. I don't think it's going to do that.
At that point, it would just become another tournament. And, you know, I don't think you'd see the hunger for it that there is. I think by saying, you've got 128 spaces, go.
We haven't sold a Masters out yet, though. So, you know, until that happens, I don't have to worry. Every Masters had people not show up or not had tickets sold.
Had all the tickets been released at once,
I think it would have sold out. Yes,
we've had sold out
so many times.
Yes,
and I agree with you there. Yes, but the way it happened, there were tickets left.
Yeah, because I mean, the year before last did sell out, and they went, "Here are some more tickets," and no one knew they were available. Also, if it's getting cool in here.
Why are we talking about this while not recording?
I don't know. He's always recording.
Yeah, he is always recording. We could just sit and carry on this conversation for a while, and then Mike could just edit it into a reasonable fashion.
Good laugh.
Yeah, reasonable. I'm not sure that concept exists in regard to this podcast.